Hey, everybody, my speech live from San Diego State University. Make sure you listen carefully and text this to your friends. It's a great conversation, and it's mostly a Q&A, so I think you're really going to like it. Talk about all sorts of different stuff, affirmative action, trans, Israel. So enjoy, listen carefully and closely, support the most important organization in America, TPUSA.com. That is TPUSA.com. Start a high school or college chapter today at TPUSA.com. And email me, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. That is freedom@charliekirk.com. Subscribe to our podcast by opening up your podcast application and typing in Charlie Kirk Show. And we are hitting the road. I'd love to see you. It's tpusa.com to see our latest movements. Go to members.charliekirk.com. That is members.charliekirk.com. If you want to support the program, become a member and ask me questions directly. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Noble Gold Investments is the official gold sponsor of the Charlie Kirk Show, a company that specializes in gold IRAs and physical delivery of precious metals. Learn how you could protect your wealth with Noble Gold Investments at NobleGoldInvestments.com. That is NobleGoldInvestments.com. It's where I buy all of my gold. Go to NobleGoldInvestments.com. Hello, everybody. Great to see you again. For those of you that are on campus today, good to see you guys. And pretty good turnout, I'm told. So this is not as many. There's a lot more conservatives here on campus than people would ever believe. So you're not alone. I want to. I'm going to single out our amazing Turning Point USA chapter. You guys do such a great job. Thank you for putting this together and for working so hard. And I think that's some Aztec art or something out there. I was going to do a whole speech about the Aztecs, but I don't need that. You guys know enough about it, or maybe you don't. Anyway, so I'm going to just talk about one thing super briefly, and then we're going to spend as much time as we can on question and answer. How does that sound? I think that's the most fun, right? People have questions, and that's really why you're here, right? Like, come on, I want to see you talk to some people. So I think it's actually a perfect thing to open up about, which is the most common question I get when I do change my mind, not this portion, but change my mind, which is, Charlie, why are you here? Why are you here? Why are you here? Which is such a bizarre question when you think about it. And it's always kind of done in an accusatory way, which is like, what is your presence doing here? They always say on my campus, which is like very possessive. It's not your campus, actually. It's taxpayer funded, you know, and if anything, it's all the students' campuses, right? It's not your campus. But it becomes this radical thing where a conservative comes on a campus and you want to have a conversation. And we truly believe at Turning Point USA, and why we're here tonight is the spirit of this, which is that free speech is the only thing that's going to keep us from permanent and severe and disgusting radicalism in this country. And we're going to have differences of opinions tonight. We did today, and I think we had some really great conversations. Is Muhammad here by any chance? I don't know if that narrows it down, but no, I don't mean that negatively. I mean, I just, what? It's a common name. It's like being named Jacob in Judaism. It's a very, is that, were you the one that we talked earlier? I don't know. He was very great. Anyway, we saw the Israel issue completely differently, super smart. His name was Muhammad. He didn't leave a last name if he's watching. Good for you, man. It was terrific. We had a long dialogue. And that's what it's all about, to have differences of opinion and to try to go in the pursuit of truth. I always am interested, though, when they say, but why are you really here? As if there's like some sort of alternative agenda. So let me tell you what my agenda is, first and foremost. It's to support our amazing Turning Point USA students that are under assault every single day for their conservative views on college campuses, every single day. And it is not easy to be a conservative on campus. And maybe it is at this campus, but you could tell me differently. Is it? Is it easy to be a conservative here? Not so easy. Well, then it's like almost every other campus. The second thing is to give those of you that are not involved with Turning Point USA, you kind of look to your left and look to your right like, whoa, there's a lot more conservatives and at least people that are open-minded to these ideas on campus than I ever would have imagined. You see, one of the tricks of the left is they try to cast the spell of isolation, that you're the only one, that you don't have community, And the left, to their credit, they're really good at this. They constantly have marches and parades, and they take over entire months of the calendar. It's incredible. And like we as conservatives, we kind of just are like, yeah, we have our viewpoints. And this is one of the reasons why, and we could talk about this later, why Trump rallies became so popular, is because it was like, oh my goodness, I'm not alone, and I share my values with thousands of other people. And the third thing is this, which is, I learn stuff by going, you know, to these campus events, and we open up the mic and we have different conversations. And maybe, you know, those of you that are on the left that are here tonight, maybe you'll learn something too. And I will say that the people that hope to destroy this country, they do not believe free speech is a fundamental value. They don't. And part of the tradition of freedom of speech is you sometimes have to hear things you don't always want to hear. It's voluntary, by the way. If you don't want to hear it, you can leave the event. It doesn't matter. There's other people that want to take your place. We oversold this thing. But it's also that if you have a very strong opinion and you're not willing to debate about it, then it's actually probably a really fragile opinion. You might believe it strongly, but it's a fragile opinion. And this is why long term, beyond just in the next 5 or 10 years, why I think conservatives and young conservatives in particular, why we're ultimately going to be successful, is because in order to be a conservative on campus, you constantly have to be defending your belief system. You constantly have to know your facts and know how to respond to people always around you. Whereas if you're a liberal, you just kind of fit in, you're like, okay, great, that's terrific. And you might be challenged here or there, but it's not heterodox to the norm of what the academy believes. And, you know, my job more than anything else is to try to speak to the next generation, speak to all people, and you know, there's all ages here tonight, but is to try to paint a different picture of what does a conservative actually believe? What do we believe at Turning Point USA? And we might agree on part of it or disagree on other parts of it. And it's pretty simple stuff, actually. I don't consider it to be overly partisan. It's that we believe this is the greatest country ever to exist in the history of the world. We believe the Constitution's the greatest political document ever written. And we also believe that if you're complaining more than you produce, you probably got problems. And you're probably on the left, honestly, if you complain more than you produce. If you produce more than you complain, you're probably a conservative. That's the two general rules for life. And even deeper and beyond that, we look at what's happening in the West right now, and we believe it's a crisis. And this transcends political lines. You know, young people are the most depressed, suicidal, alcohol addicted, and drug addicted generation in history. And maybe we should start talking about why. Maybe it would be more interesting to me to find out why so many young people are committing suicide than systemic racism. I think that's probably a better national conversation to have. I guarantee every single one of you lost a friend or somebody you know in your immediate circle to suicide in the last year or 2 years, or at least somebody that you're generally aware of. Like that's an actual national crisis that's happening. 110,000 people drug overdose in our country every single year. And so I guess that kind of begins to answer the question of why are you here? Well, I'm here to continue and hopefully reignite an American tradition, which is that no place is off limits for conservatives to go and speak. And you will see that we're not afraid of any sort of different ideas. You guys can bring any sort of perspective you want, and we can have at it. And I will say that the side that is most willing to engage in debate, robust discussion, is one that is going to be willing and being able to build large consensus over a period of time. And I want to say this, you know, to the credit of the students on the campus today where we had conversation, I wasn't shouted down. I don't think we were insulted once. There were a couple trolls here or there. You're going to get that. It's a college campus, right? But generally, you know, you guys are a lot better behaved than some of the other university campuses we went to. Much better than Cal Poly San Luis Obispo. That's much better. So I want to get to some questions, but I'll kind of reiterate this point, is that we as human beings are the speaking beings. It's our ability to make reason of a very confusing world. And as soon as we stop speaking, we are going to get into some sort of very dark chapter here in America. And there is an assault on free speech unlike anything we've ever seen in the West right now, whether it be restriction of speech on social media. Praise God for Elon Musk for purchasing Twitter. What, X? I can never call it X. It'll always be Twitter to me. And opening it up so that people can speak freely, and especially, you know, I got my Twitter account back, so I'm kind of biased. I was banned under the prior regime and dictatorship that we had there. But it's also, you might learn something. You might have your boundaries pushed. And if we have any hope of saving this country, it will be able to go to a place where you're not in the ideological majority, having a difference of opinion, seeing some common ground and having clarity and not necessarily agreement. Okay, with that, let's get to why you guys are all here. Let's get right into question and answer. Here's how it works. If you disagree, you go to the front of the line. That's right. If you have a disagreement, you guys get precedence. You guys can start lining up here. Is that the only question line? Is that right? That's going to fill up. So you guys can stand up, start getting in in line. I know we have people of all ages here, so students are going to get the priority, okay? And let me just repeat, please make it a question, not a statement with an inflection at the end of it, all right? I might ask you a question back. Now, this is a majority conservative audience. Would you guys agree? I think we have a lot of conservatives here tonight. Great. So, with that being said, if someone who is on the left or someone who is a liberal comes up and asks a question, it is tempting to want to mock them or laugh, or they might say something silly. Don't do that. Give the liberals here tonight the respect that they don't give us as conservatives on a daily basis, okay? And with that, let's open it up.
Hi, welcome. Thank you so much, Charlie. My name is Chelsea, and so I wanted to ask you today, how can we help today's first-time voters understand the importance of protecting the rights of the individual, especially our children, which here in our own state of California are trying to get the Protect Kids California initiative on the ballot?
Yeah, well, I think the Protect Kids initiative is here, isn't it? Just so everyone knows, this is one of the most important things that's happening in the country. Here in the state of California, you can undergo hormone replacement and quote-unquote transgender care without even notification of your parent. This is immoral. It's shocking. In fact, sometimes they can quote-unquote come out as trans without even notifying the parent at school. This bill is all about informed consent. It is a restoration of parents' rights. And I personally want to see it on the ballot here in November. Let democracy play out, right? Let the people decide. Amazingly, the Alphabet Mafia, which is the transgender jihadis, they don't want this to go on the ballot because, the party of democracy is really worried that people might vote against their special interests. But it turns out that the vast majority of people do not believe that 13-year-olds should be on puberty blockers. The vast majority of people do not believe that 14-year-olds should have hysterectomies or breast replacements or removal surgeries. Chloe Cole here, she was here earlier. I encourage you guys to look at Chloe Cole's social media content. Is that Chloe right there? Oh, she's in line. She's going to ask a question. And when Chloe gets to the mic, we'll let her up in a sec. She has an unbelievable story. She's a detransitioner. She was someone that was sold the lie of the trans poison and the trans agenda and regrets it and is now an advocate to try to warn children about how much damage that could be done by the trans agenda. God bless you. We'll get to Chloe in a sec, but yes.
Hi, Charlie. My name is Sasha Riva. I'm vice president of this chapter at San Diego State University.
God bless you.
Thank you. So I have a question. I'm originally from Ukraine, and I moved here legally. So I do have a question.
Yes.
What do you think of those people who cut in line in front of me, like me, illegal immigrants? And what should we do about that?
Yeah, it's a great question. First of all, thank you to your family for coming here legally. We need more of that, and that needs to be the standard. Yeah, I mean, people that come into this country illegally are line cutters, border jumpers, and they're squatting in our country, and they shall be deported and sent back to their country of origin, every single one of them. And I could go through the law. I mean, we can go through the list, and if anyone disagrees, tell me why. There's a law in the book saying you can't break into America. We decide to not enforce that law. They know that they're breaking the law. They claim asylum. Give me a break, okay? Oh, yeah, I'm claiming asylum from China or Azerbaijan or Russia. Over 115 countries are represented now on the invasion happening on the southern border. Just so we're clear, anywhere between 10 to 15,000 people are walking into this country without DNA testing right now, without background testing. We know at least well over 1,500 people on the Department of Homeland Security terror watch list have walked across the southern border. Praise God, Border Patrol was able to find one person 3 days ago that was walking across the border, and he said, hey, I want to go bomb New York City. Thankfully, that flagged somebody like, hey, maybe we should ask this guy some more questions. Praise God for Border Patrol for actually doing their job and finding this guy. He said, quote, I want to go bomb New York City. But I think it's reprehensible and disgusting that your family's waiting in line, filling out the paperwork, and waiting your turn
paying fees
is somehow a moral equivalent with someone that flies to Mexicali, goes to a bus to the Yuma-Mexico border, claims asylum, and cuts in line while you guys had to do it the right way. We're a nation of laws, we're a nation of order, and every single person who breaks our immigration law should be returned to their country of origin. Thank you very much.
Hi, Charlie. Thank you for coming. My name is Corey Jernigan. I'm the president of University of San Diego College Republicans. My question is, with the growing security state and most media becoming blatant propaganda, a lot of people feel like they're the small individual. What can I do? I hold these beliefs, but like you said earlier, I feel alone. For the individual, other than voting, what would be your advice to make them feel like they can make a difference?
Yeah, so you have to invest in self-sovereignty. So you have to don't ever try to be in a place where you never have to be dependent on the government. So from the currency that you have, I mean, I'm a big believer in alternative currencies, gold, silver. I do not have faith in the long-term perspective of the U.S. dollar at all. In fact, they're destroying the U.S. dollar every single year. That's what inflation is. Inflation is the continual slow-motion suicide of the U.S. dollar. And this is going to sound, you know, it's going to be taken out of context, but I don't care. I think that anyone who's serious about self-sovereignty should own weapons and know how to use them and own them responsibly. And I think that what we're seeing right now is we're seeing a rise in crime across the country while they're simultaneously trying to take our weapons away from us. And it's not about fear-mongering, but the standard norm of human history is chaos, bedlam, war, division, strife, civil conflict. We're all born into kind of a very stable country in a sense, and we're seeing it destabilize in front of our eyes. And then finally, don't make excuses. Try to exercise your agency, get married and have lots of kids, stay loyally married to that person, try to find Jesus Christ in your life, which I believe is the most important decision that people can make. And despite everything that's against us, oh my goodness, the globalists, you know, all this sort of stuff, that's fine. We still live in a great country. We still can do something about it. Get engaged on a local level. You can run for office, support those that do, support the petition signatures. And I'm optimistic because there's so much fight left in the American people. We are being pummeled right now by this regime. Every single day. They are trying to destabilize the country. There is a theory called the Cloward-Piven political strategy or political theory that was introduced by political theorists back in the 1960s, 1970s. And they said the way that we are going to get left-wing domination, the way that we are going to get Marxist politics is by three things. Building a permanent deep state bureaucracy in Washington, D.C., borrowing so much money that we'll never be able to pay back and bankrupting the country, and having mass migration of people from all over the world and flooding the system of immigration. I wonder what those three things would ever look like if they came into practice. You can look it up. Cloward-Piven strategy. What you are living through right now is not a mistake. It's not that Joe Biden and the current White House, they're stupid. They know what they're doing. They know exactly what they're doing. It's a strategy. It's a plan. They're trying to overload the system so they can break it, so then they can build whatever comes next. And if we have anything to say about it, we're going to say no and keep on building something that's bold and beautiful and hopefully rooted in traditional conservative American values and principles. Thank you.
Hi, Charlie. My name is Peyton Clyden, and I am the treasurer for the San Diego State Turning Point chapter. I have a quick question about what happened last week with the Ken Buck situation. And obviously, I listened to your show. I listened to a couple other shows where they said that Lauren Boebert, who is the current sitting representative in, I think, the 4th Colorado district, she was going to be moving to the 3rd district to replace Ken Buck eventually when he retired, or not retired, but got a CNN position at the end of his term. So I've heard from you, and then particularly Dan Bongino, I listen to him a lot, but they're mentioning that Boebert has to run, or she can't run in the primary and in the runoff for the seat that Ken Buck is vacating. Yeah. Can you clarify that a little bit?
Are you from Colorado?
No.
Okay, you are really passionate about Colorado politics. I love it, though.
Well, no,
I'm not trying to pick on you. It's great.
I'm just passionate about federal politics,
no,
especially.
I'm giving you a hard time. I think it's great. So just so everyone knows, the House of Representatives, the House Republicans now have a one-seat majority because Ken Buck has now inexplicably resigned to go work for CNN. So long story short, Lauren Boebert can't run for the new seat. This was all a plan. This was basically a coup by Colorado very, very far left Democrats and people that call themselves Republicans in Colorado. Without getting too deep into the weeds, it's just bad news across the board, basically for Republicans. And hopefully we'll be able to sort it out in November. But Lauren Boebert has to stay in the harder to win, more competitive seat in a different part of the state. So God bless you, man. Thanks for being involved. Thank you.
All right, Hey, Charlie, before I get into my question, my name is Josue Munoz, and I actually come from the leftist wasteland that is Los Angeles.
Okay.
And I'm actually going to transfer to Cal State LA in the fall. And so we'd really appreciate it if you made a stop there next semester or sometime soon. My question is, what are your thoughts on the fat acceptance movement? Because I'm curious, because I'm surprisingly never heard you speak on this, and I want to hear your thoughts.
Yeah. I'm very against the fat acceptance movement. Everybody is deep down, by the way, because if you said to your girlfriend, hey, you look like Lizzo, she'd break up with you because how dare you insult me? Because deep down, people don't want to look like Lizzo. No, we should look, as someone who used to be 30 pounds overweight, we shouldn't accept people that are morbidly obese or overweight. Like, get your act together. Like, go wake up earlier. Stop drinking alcohol. Stop eating poorly. We're a fat country. We are. And I'm not trying to fat shame people. I'm just trying to challenge you. I mean, again, you look at videos. I was 35 pounds heavier a year ago, and I was like, wow, I'm really overweight. I need to get my act together. And honestly, I fat-shamed myself. It was kind of awesome. And you should – and but if I've accepted myself. I mean, it was really great. My cholesterol went down. My energy went up. Like, all my blood work looks amazing now. And should I have accepted myself? No. It's like, okay, you have your first kid. All of a sudden, you start eating more carbs. And you're like, wow, like, that's not how I want to look. So I got my act together, and we have a great, you know, partner on the show, myphdweightloss.com. And so it's not easy for me to keep weight off. I don't eat dessert ever. I don't drink alcohol. Like, whatever. But, you know, being fit and having more energy is way better than eating what you want all the time. And we are a chronically obese country. Heart disease is the number one killer of Americans, followed by all sorts of, you know, liver failure, kidney failure, things that happen because of obesity. And I think we have to reject this idea that, well, you're perfect the way you are. Being, some people naturally put on weight more than others, but being obese is a choice. Outside of a chronic medical condition, I might have come across one where you're like debilitated in a bed for like years on end. Even then, I don't know if you have to become obese. Being obese is a choice, and we have done way too much pandering to try to accommodate society for what quite honestly is a lifestyle choice. And we are one of the fattest countries on the planet. We shouldn't be proud of that. What we are feeding our kids is a disgrace, high fructose corn syrup to the highly processed foods, to the cereal, to, you know, the Twinkies, to all that nonsense that we give our kids. And not to mention what we are drinking all the time from the caffeinated, not just caffeinated beverages, the energy drinks across the board. So, yeah, I think that the conservative movement should stand for a restoration of everybody being the best version of themselves, which is, you know, hey, maybe you need to lose 10 or 15 pounds. And that is actually a loving thing to say, because if you lose that 10 or 15 pounds, you're going to feel better. You might be less depressed. Do you know that being overweight is directly correlated with suicidal ideation and depression? It actually limits blood flow to the brain. So anyway, I think that might answer your question, and I think that we should try to advocate for a skinnier, healthier, happier society, and anybody can achieve that if they put their mind to it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, Charlie. So I'm a student here. Just going to start off and say that I disagree with you on a lot of things, and specifically I'd like to ask about how you and the people you associate with, the people you provide a platform for, often say things that are a lot of rhetoric that's definitely against the LGBT community, like the comedian on here earlier who was making fun of a trans person. And I'm just wondering, how do you feel that this kind of rhetoric, pushed primarily by the right, maybe influences the phenomenon that are observed, such as LGBT people having higher rates of suicide? How do you think that might play into this?
Not at all. They should get tougher. Really? Life is tough. let me ask a question. Are a bunch of Christians committing suicide because of all the anti-Christian films, music, and jokes that have permeated Hollywood the last 30 years?
What anti-Christian media?
Everything? How about the entire... You cannot watch a Simpsons episode, a Family Guy season, a Netflix special, Hulu special without, you know, oh, this pastor is unfaithful, one-off joke about the hypocrisy of the church, or, oh, this Catholic priest is a pedophile, or, oh, my goodness, they're covering for their licentiousness. It is widespread. It is embedded into the fiber of the creative code of Hollywood. So I will ask the question, has the bullying, the slander, and the mockery of, how about conservative America? Watch Bill Maher. Watch, they'll make fun of deplorables there. Awful people. They, you know, don't, they cling to their guns and their religion and Walmart. Have we seen an increase in suicide of conservative Christians because they're made fun of so much?
Do you think that maybe if you think this does?
No, you got to answer the question, because it's either that widespread mockery leads to suicide. Have we seen that connection in other places?
Well, then why? Why is...
Hold on, guys. Why are trans people committing suicide so much?
Why?
Because they have deep-seated mental problems to begin with.
Or because that's they're not why. Accepted by people like you.
What did you say? I can't hear you when they're clapping.
It's because people, I mean, society in general, you mentioned earlier that bill about making it so that a school will not have to tell parents about the kids being trans. That's because many people live in a household in which they would not be accepted for that.
They shouldn't be accepted at age 15.
Really?
If you are a boy and you come home and think you're a girl, you have a deep-seated mental problem that needs treatment, not hormones. You need a counselor, not a surgeon. You need a parent, not a groomer. If you come home and say, as a 15-year-old boy, and say, I think I'm a girl, you need someone to say, I love you enough not to accept your lie. So let me ask you a question. If someone came to you and said, I am anorexic, and I'm going to want liposuction, should we give it to them?
If they're an adult, sure.
I don't know exactly what that involves.
Do
you know what liposuction is?
I know it's a fat reduction surgery. I don't know.
Yeah, so someone who's anorexic thinks they're fat when in reality they're starving themselves to death. That's okay. Yeah. So let's just, I want to make sure we're morally clear here.
No, it would be important to recognize that that's not a solution, but it's also...
Oh, okay, so it's okay to intervene and say that certain medical interventions are bad for the patient.
Hold on. I think there's a distinction between medically transitioning and accepting different gender roles. Gender roles are definitely not based in biology. They've changed so much over the century.
No, you're changing the topic. We're talking specifically about, you mentioned parental consent, how we're mocking trans people, how it's hurting them.
I was not talking about biological transitioning. I'm talking about people identifying.
You can't biologically transition. You can only castrate yourself.
Transitioning is a fiction. Identity.
No matter how much surgery you get, no matter how many drugs you take, you're still a man, you're still a woman, period. You stay the way that you are. You can look different. Why? You can't change your chromosomes.
Yeah, but that's not what defines a man or a woman.
So let's get to it. Hold on. What is a woman? What is a woman?
There's a very simple answer to that.
Say that again.
There's a very simple answer. A woman is someone who identifies as such.
Huh? Guys? You can't answer the question.
I did answer the question. Hold on. That's an answer. How's that not an answer?
If you, in freshman introductory to logic, if you said, please define a door is a thing that looks like a door. They say no.
How else would you define it? You define a door.
XX chromosomes, an adult female with the capacity to menstruate, have birth, a womb, and a uterus, and a vagina.
So you choose that definition.
It's not choosing.
That is a choice.
It is.
All language is a choice. Language is not based on biology.
So
you choose words.
Before we descend too far into your postmodernist chaos, let me ask you another question. In the human species, what categories are there between male and female?
I'm not sure what you're asking. You mean like traits?
In the human species, what other categories are there in addition to male and female?
I'm not entirely sure. There's plenty. It changes rapidly. I don't know the whole list. There's intersex.
Has there ever been an intersex person that has the capacity to impregnate themselves? No. So they either have sex organs of more the female or the male.
Yeah, but why?
And intersex is a deformity. So it's saying like this, for example, in a normal human being, you're born with two arms and two legs.
Okay.
If someone's born without a leg, we don't say, oh my goodness, you know, that changes the entire human species. And it's an exception to the rule, not the rule itself. And so intersex is a deformity of a rule. And the rule is very clear that there is male and female. Even intersex people will either have the capacity to procreate from male with, you know, with semen or with women with an egg. So the question I will go back to, biologically, socially, culturally, environmentally, whatever you want to call it, what other categories besides male and female in the animal kingdom of Homo sapiens are there?
Biologically, you could say that there are essentially no more, but that's biologically. And if you think about...
Now we're getting somewhere.
Well, we're talking about if you identify as a man or woman, that is a choice of how you want to employ yourself in society.
Now we're talking.
Why is that determined about whether you have a penis or a vagina? Why does that affect what role you should have and how you should be seen
by
other people?
Well, before we get to roles, do you agree there are fundamental differences to how men and women are wired biologically and chemically?
Very few.
Very few?
Yes.
Okay, so how important is... Let me ask a question. How important is testosterone and estrogen differences?
Important to what?
How about muscle mass, bone density,
cardiovascular?
Let's just say differences of male and female differences of needs, wants, desires. attitudes, traits? Why is it that females like certain musical artists and men gravitate more towards the UFC? Why is it that a Taylor Swift concert is 99% female and a UFC event is 99% male? Were they told from a young age, you must like combat sports and you must like pop singers that only sing a certain way?
Certainly.
Or is it that maybe there's something biological that resonates more with what Taylor Swift is presenting and more with the honestly brutal hand-to-hand combat that you'd see at the UFC?
How can you not recognize that any of this is social? Pop music, all music is a social phenomenon. That's not rooted in our biology. How can you say that a certain genre of music is apparently masculine?
Okay, so that's fair. So then answer me a question. Can you point to a single instance of when there was a controlled variable study of when a child was given a different gender than the sex one, than what they were given at sex, and they were able to live a full, mature, and flourishing life?
What do you mean, given a gender?
Meaning, for example, you know about the John Money experiment where they had identical twins and one of the kids tragically had his genitalia seared off. And John Money, do you know who John Money is?
No, I'm not familiar with this experiment.
Okay. You're just barely dipping into the waters of the trans toxicity, my friend, which is John Money is the New Zealand 1950s, 1960s theorist who came up with this idea of gender. So before John Money, there was sex and personality. So, for example, we have two sexes, zero genders, unlimited personalities. John Money said, no, gender is this whole new concept, and anybody can pick their gender at any time. And so what he did is there was twins. One of the kids seared off his genitalia. He said, I'm going to raise this kid as a girl. And the kid had higher testosterone rates, wanted to always play with trucks, and would say, no, you're a girl, you're a girl, you're a girl. And despite all the social phenomenon, he ended up being told at age 16, you actually were a biological boy. He said, it was the most important thing anyone ever told me because I knew I was a boy my entire life and everyone was telling me I was a girl. And that John Money experiment, the guy who came up with the idea of gender itself, participated in the greatest clinical self-own in scientific history, where even he could not get a tabula rasa, a blank slate of a child who was saying, hey, you're a girl, we're going to raise you as a girl. It turns out that boys will be boys and girls will be girls, regardless of how much you try to change them. Go ahead.
That's certainly an interesting case study. However, a single anecdote is not data. It doesn't reflect an overall trend. And I'd like to point out that you mentioned this idea of feeling like they were trapped in the wrong gender's body, which is how millions of trans youth throughout the world
feel. So I'm glad you mentioned that. So can you sometimes feel things that are not true?
Yeah.
Okay, that's what's going on with trans youth. They're feeling something that is not true.
Why
For
is
example,
it not true? Why is it not?
Because it's not correlated with their biological reality.
So,
for example, they believe that, oh my goodness, I'm really a boy, I'm really a girl. Okay, well, where's the evidence of that? And by the way, the majority of young people that say that they're quote-unquote trans are autistic, they have behavioral type issues, they have underlying health conditions, depression, suicidal ideation, anxiety. To go back to your original question, why do so many trans people end up A, either committing violence or B, committing suicide? Number one, they don't get the actual watchful waiting type treatment that is necessary that's been proven successful by clinicians like Dr. Miriam Grossman over the last 30 years. You know what watchful waiting is? Instead of acting as if puberty is the problem, puberty is the solution. When a 15-year-old girl says, oh my goodness, I feel I'm a boy, we say, okay, let's wait it out. Let's wait 9 months, and maybe you might feel differently. Every girl in this audience will tell you there was a time when they were growing up where they did not feel comfortable in their body, but they grew through it. And praise God we did not give every girl in this audience testosterone because they felt uncomfortable with their body. Every single girl felt that way. Secondly, on top of that, the idea that somehow we're going to give a false hope to a 16-year-old that chemicals are going to make you feel better, and then just another surgery, and then just another intervention. It leads you down this rabbit trail where you are a shell of a human being, where you no longer have the parts you were born with. God forbid if you have regret like Chloe Cole, who's just right behind you, by the way, who was sold that lie, and she may never be able to have children again because of what the trans industry has done. And Chloe, I hope you sue them for $1 billion and put them all in prison for what they did for you. Can we at least agree on this? If it can't be reversed and young minds make bad decisions, shouldn't we at least wait till they're 18 before we give them drugs?
100%.
Okay, we agree on that, then.
Yes, I agree on that. However,
that is a strong moral agreement.
You're making a little straw man here. You're assuming that the majority of these cases are young people who are being forced to transition either through surgery or hormone replacement.
Well, you came to the wrong event.
in the vast majority of these cases, that's not what it is. It's people either as an adult transitioning, or when they're young, they're choosing to identify differently, to dress differently, to present themselves differently, not necessarily to go through a surgery or hormones. That's the minority of it.
If a man who's a lunatic who thinks he's a woman wants to wear a dress in his home, that's never been the concern. You know what the concern is? Making me call him a woman by force and firing me or somebody from a job if I don't use the right pronoun. I have no problem if somebody has mental problems in their living room alone. So be it. Dress as Cinderella, dress as a wolf. Not the problem. The issue is when you storm the HR department and say, Sam used the wrong pronouns, and I think they should be disciplined for that. And now we all have to use these pronoun markers in our bio to cater to a fringe minority that's so fragile, that is so weak, that you can't possibly tolerate the idea of somebody mispronouning you or misgendering. Like, grow up. Like, welcome to civil, mature adult society. Sometimes, how about you go be strong enough to go confront the other person and say, use my own pronouns. But no, at the root of the LGBT movement, the T stands for tyranny. And it's, you have to use my pronouns. You have to allow me to teach your children transgender pornography. You have to allow me to allow myself into your life. It is not live and let live. At the root of trans ideology is live and let us rule. And we are currently living under the enemy occupation of the trans zealots. That if you misgender somebody, you could lose your entire career. That if you drive over a pride flag, it is a hate crime punished by the Department of Justice. But if you burn an American flag, they call it free speech. We have an entire month that is dedicated towards protecting LGBTQ pride. It's not live and let live. If it was, then they would do their own thing, we'd do our own thing. Instead, it is a grooming, proselytizing strategy of people that need to recruit because they can't reproduce.
Is your masculinity so fragile that you cannot just call someone by their preferred pronouns and move on? You're willing to put away all of that?
We agreed on the children thing. Thank you for your time tonight. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ready? Hey, Charlie, how you doing? I'm a former international student who came to this country legally. Now that I've graduated... Thank you, guys. It's been an honor to be here, by the way, and I have a lot of respect for you. Watching your videos helped me learn how things really are in America and helped me make a lot of friends. However, I can't agree with all of the things you said. I agree with 90% of the things you said, but there's one or two things I have to disagree with, or maybe I've just misunderstood it for now, you know? I apologize if you didn't say this, but I've heard you say that you want to limit legal immigration in this country.
That's correct, yeah.
And I think President Trump seems to also stand for removing the H-1B program, which allows international students to work legally after they graduate. For me, it just doesn't make sense because international students mostly come with engineering degrees, medical degrees, nurses, you know, a lot of valuable things that can be very productive for this country's economy, but you want to get rid of that. And as a legal immigrant, when we become citizens, we're going to remember that, and we want to be on your side, but...
I love how you frame it as like a threat. It's okay, man.
No, it's not a threat.
We're going to remember those. It's okay. Perfectly fair. So, I mean, look, I'm not going to win you over on this, and that's fine. I'm going to ask you, though, because this is fun, why do you think I want less legal immigrants, if you were to guess?
See, that's the part that
okay, good. No, then you're coming in good faith.
Yeah.
It's very simple. That the students here that are American-born, American-raised, and been American-invested in, that are studying to become nurses and engineers, they should be given priority above foreigners. And I don't mean this as an insult, because you seem like an American-loving, great person. And honestly, if we had a real working immigration system, we should have more people like you, regardless of the H-1B system, that would come to this country. And I'm somewhat torn because you're a great ambassador of someone who loves the country and wants to, you know, continue the tradition. Unfortunately, we don't see as much of that as we would like. But the biggest thing is this, is that we have a social contract to American-born citizens, as almost any industrialized country does, right? Which is, first and foremost, if the people in this room One metric I'll give to you. It's harder and harder to own a home in this country. Prior to COVID, it was average annual salary of $59,000 a year to own a home 4 years ago. Now, according to Zillow.com, the average needs to be $106,000 a year to own a home. And it's much higher here in California, by the way. It's about $135,000 to $140,000 a year, okay? So in economics, you have to make decisions. And we fully acknowledge that when you restrict the labor supply, you're going to see higher wages and because of the restriction of the labor supply. So my perspective is that we have had this flooding of the system of both illegal and legal immigration, and we need a slowing and cooling off period where we can start to put the young people of this country that no longer are able to have the same very basic promises their parents are able to have, buying homes, owning property, having a family. And I'm not saying that immigration is necessarily always the problem. There are immigrants that contribute beautifully to this country. But when it comes specifically with the H-1B1 issue, H-1B is indentured servitude. I don't know how much you know about this or not. But you're not allowed to leave the company that you work for, basically. It is lobbied by the tech companies, for the tech companies, that anybody here studying computer engineering. Anybody studying computer engineering here? Yeah, a couple people. You're very smart. You're going to now have to compete against not just American educated, but also foreign-born and non-American educated. Final point, you are the toughest case to try to push back against because we kind of made the decision, I'm not saying for better or for worse, to bring you into the country to educate you, and then you say, hey, I'm here, I want to stay. It's very difficult to build political consensus to say, hey, go back to your country of origin, right? So I'm not trying to overly personalize the policy here, but I will say, though, that absent some sort of a normalization of our legal immigration process, our own computer engineering students, our own data scientists, our own American workers are going to have to compete with foreigners that never had to be invested in at the same level. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does, and that was a great answer. But let me ask you this, though. The reason America is such a great country is because it allows people from everywhere in the world to have a fair battleground where they can compete.
Is that why we're a great country?
That's part of the reason, in my opinion, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, my father served 20 years for the U.S. government as well while not being a U.S. citizen. I don't want to get into too much detail, but I think, you know, when you allow people from all the countries to come here legally and give them that equal opportunity, I think it gives birth to people like Elon Musk, who is also a legal immigrant.
Elon's
you know?
A great example of how immigration could be a net asset.
President Trump's wife as well.
Let me counter. Elon Omar is a great example of how immigration can be a net negative for your country. And so it goes both ways. And the Elon Omar story is, I think, important. Again, I will reiterate this. I think you are a great ambassador for the legal immigration argument, right? You love the country. You show up here very respectful. You want to make something of your life. However, my immediate concern is native-born Americans of all different races, by the way. This goes black, Hispanic, Asian. It's not a race thing. That are consistently put second and third in line for the needs, wants, and interests of either bigger corporate profits, you know, a maximized global experiment or quote esoteric economic growth. I want to see 18 to 30 year olds see real wage growth, be able to own property and flourish a little bit, and then we can start to consider opening up the legal immigration parameters a little bit more. Thank you so much.
Hi, Charlie. My name is Alexa. I am a former D1 female wrestler, and I was.
I won't mess with you. Okay.
And often I noticed that wrestling with males growing up made me stronger against females. Now, where would you put that divide between equality and obviously gender differences in athletics and in sports?
Yeah, so can I ask you a question? In wrestling, in let's just say age category of like collegiate female wrestling and collegiate male wrestling, could the best female collegiate wrestler compete with, like, an average male wrestler at the same weight class?
I did.
Okay.
But it's not common.
Okay. So I would just draw it very simply. If a female XX chromosomes wants to compete against men, like, more power to them. My bigger concern, though, is XY chromosomes coming into XX chromosome competitions and trying to use their inherent muscular advantage, their bone density advantage, you know, cardiovascular ability to then basically cheat their way to a championship. And the most famous example, of course, is Mr. Thomas from University of Pennsylvania. Mr. Thomas, for those of you keeping score at home. cheated and decided he wanted an NCAA championship, and he was a mediocre swimmer before he went into the female competition. Super simple. Some people say, oh, what about hormone therapy and all this? No, 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 no. Very simple. You must compete with the chromosome of your birth. That's the way it's always been. It's the way it should be. It's the only way to maintain fairness in sports. Now, if females want to be as so bold to go compete against men, I think they should be applauded. And the men who lose, you know, I bet you ridiculed a fair amount of men in your time that you beat. But God bless you. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Hey, Charlie. I'm Sam. I've been with TVUSA for a couple of years, and I've been paying attention to most of your stances on stuff. I agree with 90% of them, similar to another guy before me, except one. And that particular stance...
Yes, it's Israel.
Yes, it is Israel. Yeah. You're right.
How do I know?
Oh, I don't know. Who could have possibly told you? Anyway, that being said...
Yes.
Yes, that is true. But anyway, that being said, I just want to know, like, you're a Christian. You are my fellow brother in the Lord. I'm just wondering, what is the justification for supporting Israel when we can see them persecuting Christians in their own land?
Okay, so you're coming after this in good faith. I want to know, just curious, what is your, are you Catholic, are you Protestant, are you?
I am not of a denomination.
Okay, but you are Christian?
Yes.
Okay, cool. I figured by the Christ is King shirt. Can you add more specificity by what you mean, treating Christians poorly? Can you tell me what you mean?
Usually it's abuse, like being spit on when they're out in public, et cetera, things like that.
The spitting is a real thing by certain very radical Hasidic sects. Have you ever been to Israel?
No, I'm just
so
curious.
Let me just contribute this as a fellow brother in Christ. When we as Christians go to Israel, we are celebrated and treated like the most amazing you could ever imagine. Okay, so I'm positive that there are radical, you know, Hasidic sects that believe certain things, as you know, are written in parts of the Talmud where they have, you know, anti-Christian beliefs. That is not my experience with mainline, you know, Israeli belief or mainline Judaism. And I will say this: why do I like Israel so much? I'm biased because Israel changed my life. When I went to Israel, I was reading Bible stories my whole life as a committed Christian, and all of a sudden I had a life-changing experience. I went to Sea of Galilee. I'm like, oh my goodness, this is not a fairy tale. That's where Jesus walked on water. I went to the old city. I said, that's where Christ our Lord rose from the dead. I went to the Garden of Gethsemane. I said, that's where Christ our Lord was betrayed. I went to Hebron. I said, that's the Hall of the Patriarchs, so I can see Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. It demythologized the Bible for me. And it convicted me in the clearest possible terms that the Bible is real, the Bible is true, and it made it come to life for me. And I love your heart. I don't want to see any Christians treated poorly. For the record, I tweeted out against the Israeli government when they bombed a church in Gaza. You can look at it. It's very public. I do not put up with the persecution of holy sites, and I stand up for my religion. But I will say this, that I've always been treated very decently and very well when I went to Israel, and access to my holy sites and access to the archaeological truth of the Bible is something that I believe is not just a good for America, but for the world. And being able to prove that the Bible is true, be able to see that the little coins of King Hezekiah, to be able to go to Mount Carmel and see, like, oh my goodness, that's where Elijah threw it down with King Ahab. To be able to go to Mount Sinai and say, that is where God delivered the greatest moral app, you know, in human history, the Decalogue, right, that the Western civilization is built upon. So we might not agree on everything. That's why I have the heart for Israel. It changed my life. And I encourage you to go and visit and see it for yourself. God bless. Thank you.
God bless you. Thank you.
Chloe Cole, everybody.
Hi, Charlie. My name is Chloe, and I am a detransitioner from the San Joaquin Valley of California. And I would like to ask, How can organizations like Turning Point continue to partner with detransitioners like myself to make real tangible social and legislative change?
I said this in a group text. I said, Chloe Cole is one of my heroes. And I just want you, and Chloe, can you just in 30 seconds tell your story? You said it so beautifully early. She receives more death threats than I do. She is hunted down like you wouldn't believe by the trans mafia. Am I exaggerating that you are hunted down when you do public events?
Yes. No, it happens all the time. I get threats all the time just for doing my work and my advocacy. I am a formerly trans-identified teen, and I went through the process of going through a medical gender transition and miraculously coming back out of it before the age of 18. I started calling myself a boy at 12 years old after years of dealing with undiagnosed neurodivergence, body image issues in early puberty, and simply just growing up as a tomboy with normal feelings of distress around my body. And yet at 13 years old, I was fast-tracked in the process of medical transitioning. So I was put on Lupron to suppress my puberty. Just a few months later, they put me on my first shot of testosterone to masculinize my body. And at 15 years old, I underwent my first and only surgery during this time, which was a radical double mastectomy to remove my breasts. And this is the summer after my sophomore year of high school. Less than a year later, I realized that I regretted every single part of this, that I wanted to grow into a woman, that I wanted to become a mother, and that no matter what I did to my body, no matter what these doctors did to my body, it would never actually make me into a boy.
And Chloe, what? First of all, give it up for her. It's just unbelievable. And so we're going to do everything we can to bring you as many campuses as possible because this trans thing is out of control. And so that's my answer to your question. But final thing I want you to talk about, Chloe, here before we get to the next question. What is your message to a 16-year-old that is convinced by everyone around them that they need drugs and hormones? What is your message to that young person struggling with this right now?
You deserve better. There is no such thing as being born in the wrong body because the way that we were made, whether we're male or female, old or young, sick or healthy, our life, our body is a gift, and our sex, our roles in society are to be celebrated. It's something to be proud of.
Praise God. Chloe, you're a hero. God bless you. Thank you so much. Give it up for Chloe, everybody. She's incredible.
Hi, Charlie. I'm actually another detransitioner. My name is Laura Becker. So I do kind of similar things to Chloe, and I'm very proud that this year I'm actually releasing a memoir about how I survived the transgender cult. And so, thank you. So my question is, you know, there's a lot of detransitioners that I know who obviously have severe psychological damage, PTSD, and that damages their ability to trust groups or to move on. And so a lot of detransitioners that I know are skeptical of the right and the right's motives because basically they worry about falling into another manipulation just like they did on the left. So my question is, how can conservatives provide assurance to detransitioners that it's safe to find community on the right and that they won't be swept under the rug once we succeed in fighting gender ideology?
What a beautiful question. And look, here's my best answer to you. And this is just off the top of my head. We did not think or talk about the trans issue 5 or 6 years ago. We don't have an agenda about it. It came to us. And our agenda is super simple. We want the division and a bright line and a immovable line between adult and child. That is something that can build consensus amongst all sorts of different groups. And as far as building community, there's no special agenda. I mean, we're not here to, you know, push anything except that we believe this is a social contagion. I don't have to convince you of it. It is a cult. It operates like one. If you dare speak out against it, they might use violence. They might use force. They definitely use intimidation and name calling. And so, you know, I would just say also judge us by our fruit. Judge us by how over a long period of time detransitioners are treated at Turning Point. I think we treat everyone with respect. And I've just been so inspired to learn from Chloe first and foremost. And that's the last thing I'll say is that we more have a posture of we want to learn from you. not tell you. I've learned more from Chloe Cole about the intricacies of all of this than almost anybody else, because she was in the operating room going under general anesthesia from the transgender cult. So I hear the skepticism, I hear the concern, and the more detransitioners that ever want to come to our event, that ever want to speak out, they're always welcome. And, you know, this is a safe organization for them that will celebrate them and help them recover from the trauma they experienced. God bless you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Charlie.
Hi, my name is Miracle, and everyone in line, trust, I did not mean to cut you guys.
You say your name is Miracle?
Yes.
That's a beautiful name.
Thank you. I wanted to ask what you thought of affirmative action, because I am someone, I'm a Pacific Islander, I fall under that, you know, tree, and I am a senior in high school, and I plan on attending college. Many of my teachers have told me, especially my counselors, like, I've been nervous about getting into colleges. Many have told me, you're underrepresented. You're a person of color. Like, you're guaranteed a spot in the college of your dreams. And I've been told that by many of my teachers. And I wanted to ask you what you thought about it, because I refuse to believe that I'm going to be accepted into the college of my dreams due to the color of my skin or the underrepresentation of my people. And more on, I have great grades, I'm smart, I'm intelligent, and I plan on...
Affirmative action always puts one person above another based on characteristics that I don't think are important. And you have just beautifully isolated what is so deeply morally wrong about affirmative action, which is, you've studied really hard, I imagine, right? You've applied yourself.
Yes.
And your teachers are looking at you as a skin color. They're not looking at you as someone with good character, good test grade, someone that shows up and does all the extra homework. They're obsessed with your skin color. And we have a word for that. It's called being a racist and a bigot. I hate to cut to that too fast. But if there was ever a time to use that term, it's that. And let me tell you the tragedy that you're going to have to navigate. Let's pretend your dream school is Stanford. Okay? Let's just pretend. It's got problems, but, you know, it's got some good departments. Okay? And you go to Stanford. Do you know the problem is? People are going to think you got there just because of your skin color. It creates more racism. They're not going to assume that you had good grades, that you could have gotten in on your own merits, which, based on how articulate you asked the question, you probably could. And then all of a sudden, you're going to have this hanging over your head of people that might say, is she there because of affirmative action? Is she there because of these policies? We want merit. We want a society based on how hard somebody works, how hard they apply themselves, the content of their character, not just what they look like. And so I'm glad to see the Supreme Court that came in and say that parts of affirmative action are unconstitutional, and I think we need more of it. And I think that you're a great example of that, because you want to be judged by your work, not just the underrepresentation of your people. God bless you. Miracle. Thank you. Is that Erica again?
It is Erica again. Hi, Charlie. So since meeting you...
We made friends earlier. She was homeless a year ago, and now she's thriving. How great is that? Isn't that...
Since meeting you a few short hours ago, I've already had numerous people remove me on Instagram and tell me they can no longer be my friends because I'm here at a free event learning both sides of the spectrum. Anyway, and I also forgot to tell you my pronouns. I identify as non-binary, Joe Biden. Live and let live. Everybody can live however they want. They can do whatever they want. And my question for you is, do you have any hate? And is Turning Point USA against the LGBT community? Because I'm being told that by coming here and listening to you speak that I'm either a racist or a fascist or against the LGBT. And isn't fascism when someone doesn't agree with your beliefs and your views and they want it either your way or the highway?
Yeah, the people that defriended you on Instagram, they're the fascists.
That's what I thought.
But I do hate, and I'll tell you who.
Okay.
The Bible tells me in Psalm 97:10, if you love God, you must hate evil. And I'll tell you what do I mean by evil. I hate people that call themselves doctors that butchered Chloe Cole. That's who I hate. I hate people that call themselves doctors and perform the million abortions we see every single year in the abortion industry. I hate people that sex traffic women into this country under the guise of immigration on the border. So I do not have hate for a group. I do not have hate for a people. I have hate for actions and individuals, especially that are in professions that institutionalize evil. Yes.
So just so I can get it on my camera. So
Instagram. Don't worry, we got plenty of cameras, but yeah.
But yes, so you do not hate the LGBT community. Well, no, and Turning Point is not against LGBT.
No, how could I hate that which I have a heart for?
Thank you.
And I might not agree at that for some of the lifestyle choices that some people make, but of course not. And if someone said, Charlie, what's your view on marriage? I say, I believe marriage is between one man and one woman. But if you ask me, what do I have hate in my heart for somebody that doesn't choose the lifestyle that I believe that God laid out in the scriptures? Of course not.
Yes, I was told that Turning Point USA is against LGBTQ.
Well, you could be told a lot of different things.
I know,
different
it's all
people.
Bullshit.
I rest my case. Thank you so much.
God bless you, Charlie.
Hi, Charlie. My name's Noah. I just want to say everything you said, Ben Shapiro, Matt Walsh, 100% agree. I was just wondering what you would do about the economics problem in this country. So, you know, we deficit spend every year. The government is in a continuous cycle where we deficit spend more and more every single year. What would you say that we should probably do about this issue that's kind of continuous and an upward
cycle? Yeah, so every person in this audience is getting 10 to 15% poorer every single year. It's called inflation. And do not believe the spin on the media. There is only one reason why we have inflation, and that is the overspending of the federal government. And we made a decision. Both parties made a decision. I want to be factually correct on this, where at COVID, we decided to lock down our country unnecessarily. The lockdowns will go down as one of the worst mistakes in American history that we'll have to pay off for the next 100 years. Secondly, we decided to go spend $7 to $8 trillion that we do not have. We have added anywhere between $7 to $8 trillion to our national debt in the last 4 years. It is 4 years ago, almost to the day, when Mike Pence took the podium and he said 15 days to slow the spread. We have added $7 to $8 trillion to the national debt. That's on top of the huge spending on top of it. So what is inflation? It's very simple. Inflation is when you have more of a currency and fewer goods and services, and when the currency or the dollar or the money is outpacing or is more than the goods and services, when that balance goes out of whack, when you have more dollars than people know what to do with it. That's why you see the stock market creeping up to 40,000 points, even though it's not correlated to economic growth. It's not correlated to robust consumer confidence. It's not correlated to wage growth. It's just we have so many dollar bills, they have to go somewhere. And so how do we fix it? Well, neither political party in D.C. is serious about fixing it, unfortunately. And the way we need to fix it is we need to dramatically cut federal spending. Dramatically cut federal spending. We need to come together, both political parties, and balance our budget, because we are stealing money from future generations. And the normal things that are in front of you, that would have been in front of your parents' generation, are coming more and more out of reach for all of you. So cut federal spending, and then we need to audit the Federal Reserve, because the Federal Reserve is a criminal enterprise.
Yeah, I was wondering. What do you think we should spend less on, though? Like more, like
everything. Everything. The only thing I wouldn't touch are current obligations of Medicare and Social Security, but we need to cut the bureaucracy. We need to cut our military budget. We need to cut our defense budget. We need to cut our social services. We need to go across the board. And it's not easy. You're going to have to make harsh cuts. But you know who makes harsh cuts? This is what really ticks me off. Many of your families when you were growing up made harsh cuts after the 2008 financial crisis. After the 2008 financial crisis, many of you didn't go on vacations for 4 or 5 years. Many of you had to downsize from the home that you're living in. Maybe you had to go move into an apartment and you had to rent. Maybe your mom had to carpool to work. Everybody in this room went through downsizing after the 2008 financial crisis. And D.C. refuses to downsize. 8 out of 10 of the wealthiest counties in America are around Washington, D.C. They get richer and you get poor. It's a moral injustice. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I want to shout out Freedom 2.0, which is our official water sponsor, by the way. There you go. Before I forget to do that, we'll go about another 15 minutes if we can. Yes, sir.
Hi, Charlie. My name is Ori. I was wondering what your thoughts are about the current BDS movement on campuses and the rising anti-Semitism in the country.
I call it Jew hatred. I'm very much against BDS. BDS, for just so you know, is boycott, divestment, sanctions, which is a Jew hatred movement to try to blockade Israel by misrepresenting Israel as an apartheid state. So I'm pretty well documented. I'm one of the more non-Jewish pro-Israel voices in the conservative movement. I'm not an apologist. I call balls and strikes if Israel does something I don't like. But Jews have a right to a homeland, and half the world's Jewry lives in the in nation of Israel. And the Bible is abundantly clear that we must bless Israel, period. And I stand by that. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hi, hello, Charlie. It's nice to see you again. So my question is, sorry, I'm nervous. How is the best way to solve homelessness and crime in America? Because it has, when I come from Tijuana, and when I got here, I always heard about America being the greatest nation, being the where no one is poor, you know? And then when I got here, I remember the first time I went to San Diego downtown, it was horrible. And then I went to L.A.
I can just see the YouTube video. Mexican immigrant says America is horrible. You know, it's just like, it's just see it. No, I'm giving you a hard time. It's very simple. We know how to solve crime. You lock up criminals and you don't relax penalties. We know how to solve homelessness. I have a heart for the homeless. Many of them have mental issues that they're dealing with. A vast majority have substance abuse issues. Super simple. You have to have a prime directive. The streets are not your home. Period. We're going to get you help. We're going to bring you to a shelter. We're going to help you recover. We're going to get you treatment. We're going to make sure you get attention. You're going to get fed. You're going to get clothed. You don't do it in the open air. It's not good for you. It's not good for society. It's not good for our hospital system. It's not good for anybody. For example, if you go to a local hospital between 1 and 5 a.m., I guarantee there'll be 2 to 3 homeless people every night that run into traffic. They get run over by a bus. They get run over by a car. And it is completely unnecessary in the sense that if they're in a shelter, that wouldn't be happening. And these poor people, a lot of them die. They run into traffic. It takes huge resources. You know, you have to all of a sudden, you know, redirect a lot of things in the emergency room. Other people who need critical care might get triaged and they might not get the same attention that's necessary. That's just one example of dozens. And so we need to do what we once did in this country, which is we love you. We're not going to allow you on the streets. We're going to nicely and kindly pick you up and we're going to bring you to a homeless shelter. And if you come back again, we're going to bring you back to the homeless shelter. And I, for one, do not want to raise my child in a country where I have to tell her what to do when she's playing in a playground if she encounters a hypodermic needle. That is literally, there are guidelines in Seattle and Portland public schools of what kids, what to do if you're a 7 or 8 year old if you come across a hypodermic needle. And that is the excesses of allowing a fringe population to basically manipulate the standard of living of the rest of us. So have compassion for the homeless. The streets are not your home. Thank you so much. I appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you, Charlie. Thank you.
Hi, Mr. Kirk. My name is Dan. I come from the northern part of San Diego. I have a question alongside with a fun question. So question is, what's your message for our generations who are very anxious from issues ranging from elections or future elections to family issues? And then the fun question is, I was wondering if you're a Star Trek fan, is there a Mr. Spock on board?
Yeah, that's very funny. I actually am I'm more of a Next Generation guy than I am a Captain Kirk guy, believe it or not. I have a whole theory for that, but we can geek out on Gene Roddenberry a different time. So to your first question, if you're anxious, look, do not wait for politicians to solve the problems for you. I will say this. This is Charlie Kirk speaking. We have Turning Point Action. This is not the official position of Turning Point USA, but I sure hope that Donald Trump wins in November, and I think all of you agree, okay? And if he wins, I think it will be a lifeline for the country, but don't act like your life is going to be amazingly better just because someone wins an election. You still need to get married. You need to go to church. You need to get your faith right. You need to maybe get your body right. You need to stop watching pornography. Maybe you need to get better friends. You need to not be around people that gossip all the time. And so I'm a massive believer, and I don't believe college – I see no evidence that college has an emphasis on this. In fact, I think college is the opposite. College really teaches you that you're just a symptom of the things around you. I'm a huge believer in agency. Your ability to wake up one day and say, I no longer want to be what I am. I could be a better version of myself. This is why I'm so inspired by people that go through AA, and I mean that. The most amazing people are former alcoholics. and they are constantly recovering, and they're so honest. And by the way, AA is a religious exercise, just so we're clear. It's literally Christianity put into a recovery program. And so I'll just repeat that, which is this generation is suffering. It's the most depressed, suicidal, alcohol-addicted, drug-addicted generation in history, and a politician's not going to save that. It's going to require a bottom-up revival spiritually and mentally, emotionally, across the board. Final thing I'll say is this. You can't have revival without repentance, and you can't have repentance if you don't talk about sin. And we all fall short of the glory of God, and I'll rest my case on that. Thank you. We'll get a couple more here.
Hi, Mr. Kirk. I just wanted to ask you, well, with everything that's going on with Dr. Jordan B. Peterson and how he has been trialed as almost like criminal and sent to reeducation, and they're wanting to revoke his license and censor him and not let him speak, and that's a very famous person.
Yes.
How dangerous and crucial and just horrible is it really for the average person?
I mean, they're going to come after everybody. The soft tyranny will not stop at Steve Bannon and Peter Navarro. It will not stop at Jordan Peterson. This is an all-encompassing leviathan that wants to swallow the entire civilization and society. And this is what drives me nuts about people that are cheerleading Donald Trump to go to prison. I just laugh, especially the socialists. I'm like, you realize they're coming for you guys next. Like, if they take out all of us conservatives, they're going to nuke all of the social. You think like, oh yeah, we're buddy buddies with the regime. They're going to come after all of us. Anyone that has a disagreement or a differing view with the neoliberal order, and Dr. Peterson has a view, differing view on the trans orthodoxy, which literally is a religion. We are living under the religion of basically transgenderism of the West. So it's a big deal, and I love Dr. Peterson, and we need to pay very close attention to it.
Yeah,
thank you so much.
We need to keep supporting him in
yes,
every
we
way
do.
We can.
I agree. Thank you so much.
Thank you for coming here, Mr. Kirk. So a quick background. So my dad came here from Iraq 40 years ago. We're a small community called Chaldean, small Catholic
yeah.
community.
They're incredible.
And over these past 40 years, from barely graduating high school to not even being able to afford college, he's been able to build himself up, and he's been able to live the American dream, which is something that I'm very proud that he's been able to do. What we've are able to see here, especially at SDSU, I go to USD, is the hatred for America from students that live here who haven't gone to any other countries, where they talk down about it, saying America is a colonizing country, that we need to do this, this, and this to help all these people because we're such a bad country, and just hating it in general. So what would your solution be for us conservatives to fix that, as well as how can we fix ourselves as a country to be more to put God first? Because 3 years ago, I'm part of the College Republicans at USD. We had Kristen Hawkins at university. When there was a lot of protests, there was students saying that it's very bad to say, but that God raped Mary, that a lot of bad and a lot of derogatory stuff towards Jesus and God, and this is a private Catholic university. So how can we fix that?
That was at a private Catholic university?
Yeah.
Wow. That's heretical, isn't it? And Catholicism, I would imagine. I'm not Catholic, but I don't have to dive that deep into the catechism. Yeah, Catholic in name only. We know the type in the evangelical world too. This is what drives me nuts, is that historians are going to look back on America and wonder why so many millions of people had it so great and they decided to hate the country that gave them so much. And it is the sociological question of our time. And I don't have a great answer. The only answer I have is, why do people commit suicide? And we don't know. We know some, we think we know, but we don't know what people were thinking in those last moments, right? I mean, some people, praise God, aren't successful, and they tell us they think it's hopeless, or, you know, they have other issues going on. You're living through a slow motion suicide of America. That's what you're living through. There is no other way to spin it. Economically, what's happening on the border, culturally. I mean, we have this transgender thing going on. And the good news of that is we can stop doing it. It's not happening to us. We're doing it to ourselves. And this is why President Donald Trump is so successful right now, and I hope he continues to be. He's the only one right now that says, hey, maybe we should stop hurting ourselves and start being Americans again and rebuild our country from within. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Hi, Charlie. First off, very big fan. I've been following you from the beginning, man. So I appreciate you being here. There's been multiple people talking about it, including that last guy. So I think I can answer your question as someone who was once suicidal about why people feel like that. During those suicidal times, I felt very alone and in the sense of like not having that community, like has been mentioned before, you know, community, whether that be within within the Catholic community or then or amongst friends or just amongst general public area. So and then amongst that also, like was mentioned before, I have been fired for discrimination. Just from the moment people find out I'm Catholic, they find any type of complaint to go against me, and the way that they write it up on papers, I can't really fight it. So my question is, what is the best approach to reach out to people that like used to be me that were suicidal, but feel like that feeling of loneliness, and they just drag themselves deeper into that pit of feeling alone.
First of all, thank you for your testimony. Can you just repeat the question exactly that you want me to answer? Because there's so much there.
What do you suggest for how can people reach out more to those who have that feeling of loneliness?
Yes. Okay. Great. So it's not dissimilar to the analogy earlier. We're losing a sense of community in this country. I firmly believe that our overaddiction to smartphones is one of the most destructive developments in the modern era. I really do believe that. So let me tell you, I always look to the scriptures for an answer. I honor the Sabbath. I'm a Christian. I'm not a Seventh-day Adventist. But I turn my phone off from Friday night to Sunday morning. I highly recommend you guys all do that. You need to carve out an entire day where your phone goes off. If I can do it, you guys can do it. And your life will improve dramatically. Yeah, it's a little hard. Your friends might not be able to reach you. They might have to go, I don't know, knock on your door and find you, like the way it was, you know, in a different time, in a different place. Yeah, that's what I honor the Sabbath and keep that day holy. For 6 days you shall work, for one day you shall rest. I'm a big believer in that. I think it would solve some, not all, of the mental health issues that some people are facing. And then finally, we have a crisis of isolation. We need more young people to get married and have families. We need more people to be part of faith communities. And finally, I know this might sound a little, I don't know, like hippie, but I really believe they're poisoning us with a lot of the food that we eat in this country. And I think you have to be very careful with what you eat and what you consume. At least do a little more research about, you know, macros and micros. There's only three types of food: fats, proteins, and carbohydrates. You don't need any carbohydrates to live, and they actually might be hurting you. I'm not here to give like wide sweeping nutritional advice, but at least for me, when I cut out basically all carbs, it was like a great thing for me. My body just doesn't handle it well, and lost a bunch of weight and have a lot of energy. And you know, again, everyone's different. But the way that it currently is, we eat almost all carbohydrates, the bad types of fats, and not enough protein, and so we end up getting super overweight and our blood work is terrible, and we get type 2 diabetes and heart disease and all that other stuff. So anyway, I just live a deliberate life and live with intentionality. And for those of you that are doing great, find someone who isn't and try to be their friend and try to be there for them, because we're living through a major mental health crisis. All right, we'll do two more. Yes, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hello. I agree with you on most things, there's one major issue I disagree with on. I think that communism can be used for the good of society. Hold on.
Guys.
Bear with me.
Well, I'm going to stand up for you. Guys, let him talk. Okay? We talked about this.
Before I ask my question, can you state why communism always fails?
Okay, yeah, great question. Very simple. Human beings, in my belief and in any sort of observation of human nature, are viciously self-interested. And they will not act communally, ever given an opportunity to do so otherwise. So we are not communal social creatures, as postulated by either Rousseau or Marx. In fact, we're far more self-interested and sinful in our disposition. And that is why communism has never worked and will never work, unless you have an example you could point to.
I don't. I agree with you, which is why this comes across as weird. We know that communism fails, sorry, very bright lights here. We know that communism fails because, oh my God, I'm sorry, I'm just.
I'll help you out a little bit. Maybe this might help you, okay? It's anti-human. It is anti-family. Remember, Marx talked openly about destroying the nuclear. Is that helping at all?
It does.
Okay, good.
So communism fails on when you see someone's business, all the other businesses that are in that industry stop selling. So if we know that that's going to be the result, why don't we use the negatives of communism for good? And what I mean by that is use it for a good that we don't want people to have, specifically drugs. We don't want people to have meth or fentanyl, so why not socialize the drug industry so that the government sees drugs from drug dealers and distributes it to users to force shortages and to basically force a drug famine?
That is a very interesting idea. So what your idea is, because I want to take every idea seriously, is we nationalize the meth industry, and it will be so poorly run, no one will get their meth on time. And there'll be like TSA waiting lines to get your meth. They'll be like super bankrupt. They'll like take every possible federal holiday off. And people will stop doing meth because the delivery mechanism and the production, they'll be like 10 years delayed in making meth and people will just give it up.
Basically, yes.
That's actually kind of smart. The meth store is only open 4 hours a day. Everyone's super angry when you walk in. You might be onto something. I'm not even being sarcastic.
I think that users would be more than willing to turn in their dealers. And once dealers realize that they can't sell drugs because they'll be seized and distributed, that's sort of the end of the drug market.
Hey, I mean, you got me at trying to make the meth stores like the TSA. So God bless. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, Darren.
Hi.
Had I known I was going to be the last question, I never would have stood up. But
I didn't hear what he said.
I was just curious as to how you feel about those kids in Massachusetts that were just charged criminally for the racist group chat.
I hate it, and I plan on speaking out against. I don't know what they said, so I want to make sure, even if it was very, very vile, I do not. So gentlemen, just understand the situation, okay? You might have heard it. It's become a national news story. I do want to see the messages for myself so I can speak precisely, because I don't believe the media when they say they're racist messages. I want to know exactly what they are. This is a group of 16-year-olds, right?
Eighth graders.
That's even worse. Oh, my goodness. That's a group of 14 and 15-year-olds. They were in a group chat, some as young as 13, that were posting, let's just say, gross things in a private group message that the media is telling us is racist. Let's pretend it's as vile and as racist as it gets. They are now going to face criminal penalties under incitement of violence and hate crime laws. Let me be as blunt as possible. This is a modern-day death penalty for these kids. How are they ever supposed to recover if they get indicted for a hate crime at age 16? That will be hung over their head for the rest of their lives. And I just find it to be so amazing to me. Here is the left in Massachusetts, perfectly fine if a kid wants to chop off their parts, if they want to go into a trans clinic, you know, we're not going to ask any questions, right? There's no way they could be making a mistake. And here's a bunch of kids that are in a private group message, and every one of you have said stuff in group messages that you probably regret. Don't act too holy, okay? Every one of you have, okay? And we're now going to criminalize teenage gossip? I want to see the messages. I want to. I want to see the charging documents and the indictment. But based on everything that I have learned, it is one of the grossest overreaches of government power. And this is going to come after everybody then. If you now make an off-color text message, things I said in this speech are going to say, you're inciting violence because of all this. I find it to be awful, and I hope that they lose on appeal, and I hope these kids don't kill themselves. I really do. Because, I mean, could you imagine all of a sudden you're now a national news story because you were posting stuff in a bunch of group chats that you now regret, and you're 13 years old? We're now going to hold people as their moral worth for the rest of their life for what they do when they're 13 years old? It's remarkable to me. Thank you for the question. I appreciate it. All right. In closing, everybody, I want to thank you guys for sitting through all that. We live in a great country. I want to speak about California. I know it might seem like you guys are outnumbered, but I have a special place in my heart for California patriots. I really do. You guys do such a great job. And scrap for every inch. We need all of you on board this year. Support your local Turning Point chapter. Get involved at your local church. You know, if you're not yet subscribed or following our podcast, we'd love the chance to earn the right to be your daily news source. Charlie Kirk, sure you guys can check it out. But most importantly is this, is that if someone came out today and said, Charlie, you know, are you optimistic? If I said, yes, I'm optimistic, you guys would go home and do nothing because you say, oh, Charlie said he's optimistic. He thinks we're going to win. If you guys say you think we're going to win, I say that, oh, you know, I'm pessimistic. You do nothing. Because I'd say that I'm not too happy or hopeful for the future. Instead, it's wholly dependent on what you do. So do your part. Increase your activism. Stay engaged. Stay involved. Stay aware. And God willing, with a miracle from the divine, we'll be able to take this beautiful country back. God bless you guys. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.